But anyway, good to have you in the service. So several weeks ago, the last time we were in our Revelation prophecy series, I introduced this thought of God of the gaps. God of the gaps. That's my title tonight. And I introduced the thought of gaps of time between key events in the prophetic timeline. There is a hermeneutic principle. If you're studying hermeneutics, there's a principle called the gap principle. It's not the gap theory, but the gap principle. And it says that when studying prophecy, the prophets often wrote of two events in prophecy side by side without telling you or even knowing that there was a gap of time between those two events. It was as if they looked out and they saw mountain peaks, but they didn't see the valleys in between. For example, Psalm 8 and 5, I think we can put this verse up. Psalm 8 and verse 5, "For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels," talking about Christ, "and hast crowned him with glory and honor." The first phrase speaks of his incarnation. The second phrase speaks of his glorification. But you and I know there's a gap of time between those two statements. Isaiah 9 and verse 6, you know this, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." Well, you know when that took place, don't you? But the next statement, "And the government shall be upon his shoulders." That didn't happen the first time he came. That'll happen the second time that he came. So that's the gap principle. All over Micah 5, 2 does that. All over you have these gaps. And two statements are put together, but in the colon or the semicolon or the comma, there could be 2,000 years of a gap between that. And so I introduce this thought to you that between key events, there are some gaps of time that are not spelled out explicitly, but by deducting different things, we can find those gaps of time. There are three of them. I gave you two, and then we started on the third. And so the first gap is a gap between the crucifixion and the beginning of the tribulation. You're at Daniel 9. We're not going to cover this again, but Daniel 9, 24, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, upon thy holy city, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. And then down in verse number 27, he, this is Antichrist, shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. We've covered this several times, one of the most important prophecies in all of the Bible, because it gives us a timeline for future events. It is called Daniel's 70th week, and without going back into it, these 70 weeks are 70 weeks of years, comes out to 490 years of time. And God basically says that in a 490 year period of time, he's going to do some things with Israel, which is the restoration of Israel. We know that that plan is fulfilled in the millennial reign. What is described here is Israel in the millennium. So this is God's eternal plan with Israel, and God says it's going to take me 490 years to complete it. And he even tells us when the clock starts, Nehemiah 2, we looked at that. And it runs for 483 years, and then the nation of Israel crucifies their Messiah, and God calls time out. Do you remember that? He stopped the clock. And there's a period of time between the 69th and the 70th week. A period of time. Then that 70th week is also called time of Jacob's trouble, or 7-year tribulation period. And when that 70th week is done, then that's when Jesus comes back and restores Israel. But there is a gap of time. It's called the church age, or time of the Gentiles, between the 69th and 70th week. So there is a gap there. Then the third gap, because I wanted to spend time on the second one, the third gap is an interval between Armageddon and the millennium. The Battle of Armageddon takes place at the very end of the tribulation, takes place at the second coming. Armies of the world gather together in the valley of Megiddo. Jesus Christ returns to meet them there in battle. And of course, when Christ returns and Battle of Armageddon, and that begins the thousand-year millennial reign of Christ, the thousand-year kingdom. So the Battle of Armageddon, that's the battle that ends the seven-year tribulation period, gives way to the millennium, but not immediately. What I said is that the official reign of Christ does not begin the day after the Battle of Armageddon. If the battle ends on Tuesday, then the thousand-year kingdom doesn't start on Wednesday. There is a gap of time. You're in Daniel 9, go to Daniel 12. Well, just in case you weren't here, you got to get the part one. But Daniel 12, verse 11, from the time that the daily sacrifice should be taken away, and the abomination that make a desolate set up, there should be 1,290 days. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. We ran the verses. We saw that the tribulation is divided into two equal periods of 42 months each. 42 months is 1,260 days of 30-day months. And so 1,260 days is the length of each half of the tribulation. But here there are 45 days. And then in verse 12, there are 75 days beyond the end of the tribulation and before the official beginning of Christ's reign. Okay, can't go through all of the verses again, but we've got a gap period. It's kind of like this. The president, whoever he, she will be elected on what? November the 6th? November the 6th is when we elect a new president, all right? And then whoever it is, I forget all the politics, whoever it is doesn't actually take office till January 20th. So he's elected, but he's not going to begin. It takes some time to set up an administration. So for 75 days between the Battle of Armageddon and the millennial reign of Christ, there is a gap of time. The gap of time that we really are interested in is the gap of time between the rapture and the tribulation. Now listen carefully to what I'm going to say. The tribulation takes place after the rapture. We are pre-tribulationists. But there are several reasons to believe that the tribulation does not begin immediately after the rapture. There's a difference in saying that the rapture is before the tribulation and saying that the rapture begins the tribulation. There's a difference with that. And for many years, Bible believers assumed that the rapture is the event that triggers the tribulation, but I don't believe that's so. I believe that the rapture, or I believe that the tribulation begins with the Antichrist covenant with Israel. Amen. That is the event. Now, that covenant will absolutely happen after the rapture. But how long after? For the countdown of the 7 years of the tribulation to start at the rapture, Israel would need to sign the covenant the day after the rapture. But nowhere in Scripture can I find that that's the case. Right. Furthermore, there are some events that need to take place before Israel signs the covenant. Now, I'm being delivered here because I don't want anybody to walk out of here saying I said I didn't say what I said, all right? Nothing has to take place prophetically for the rapture to occur. It could happen tonight, and I would be fine with that. But there are some events that have to take place before the tribulation begins, leading me to believe that there is a gap of time. I'm not going to tell you how long the gap of time is because I'm not going to be here. If you're post-trib, you might want to try to figure it out, all right? Because you're going to want to know those things. I have no idea. So six things tonight, and we covered a couple of them. I'm not going to rehash them. There's a battle in Psalm 83, I believe that battle takes place either before the rapture or after the rapture, but before the tribulation.
Yes, sir.
As we speak right now, Israel is in a war for her survival. There have been thousands of attacks against Israel since her rebirth as a nation, and no nation has had to fight as much for her survival as Israel has. So tonight, Israel fights Hamas on one side, and now Hezbollah on the other side, and nobody knows how it's going to end for now, all right? And the Bible gives us the outlook for Israel, and prophecy gives us a number of wars that's going to be fought. Israel is at the epicenter of every one of them. One of those wars is described in Psalm 83. There's no battle in the history of Israel that fits the description of Psalm 83, leading me to believe that it is a future battle. What happens in that battle is that there is a confederacy of nations that surround Israel, that attack Israel, or Israel attacks them. Either way, Israel wins a very decisive victory, and Israel will be able to rest in peace for some time. The nations that are involved are Jordan and Lebanon and Syria, Gaza, the Palestinians. And Bible students differ as to when it will take place. It is my belief that that war takes place, again, either before the rapture, after the rapture, but before the tribulation. Just this week, Israel launched an attack against Hezbollah inside Lebanon. One of the chief architects of Hamas was also assassinated yesterday, I believe it was, inside Tehran, Iran. And they are blaming Israel for that attack. I don't know. I'm not the Middle East expert. I'm not sure Israel was responsible for the attack inside Iran, but they were responsible for the attack inside of Lebanon. Now, I don't read the newspaper and try to fit this headline in Ezekiel and that headline, and I don't do that. That's newspaper exegesis is what it is. And when you do that, then you fall into the temptation of trying to find every event in the Bible, and you can't do that. So I don't know if the current situation is Israel, is prophetic, or part of anything that I don't know that, but I know that the stage could be set for the battle of Psalm 83, as far as I'll take it. There's a second thing that's going to happen before the tribulation, I believe. That's the battle of Gog and Magog. And we looked at it last week, Ezekiel chapter 38. This Russia leading this Islamic invasion against Israel, and Israel defeating this alliance. We talked about it very, very briefly. I believe that the battle takes place sometime in the beginning of end time events. And I believe that that battle, the Gog and Magog, probably takes place before the tribulation, somewhere in that interval. Now, that's where we stop. So let me give you three or four more tonight, all right? Of things that I believe that are going to take place at the very beginning, in the very, that interval, to set things up for the tribulation period. So the third thing is the revival of the Roman Empire and the rise of the Antichrist. Outside of Jesus Christ, there is no person in either history or prophecy that commands more attention than the Antichrist. Charismatic leader going to come on the scene, going to capture the world's attention as a visionary leader. They're going to turn to him for solutions for the world's problems. He'll be able to take control of the governments of the world, and for a very brief time will be a one world leader. What will propel him to power will probably be his peace solution in Israel. It is that covenant that he signs with Israel that begins that tribulation. But here's my question for you. Who is he, and where does he come from? And should he be on the national stage or international stage right now? How long is it going to take for him to rise to power? How long does it take to make a peace treaty with Israel? Daniel chapter 7. Now we're going to give you the Reader's Digest version tonight. How many of you are cold in here? I see your hand. A few people? I'm freezing, but I see a bunch of y'all putting y'all's blankets on. Sunday I was freezing. What do you think about freezing? I mean, I like froze in here Sunday. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it was very balmy. In Daniel chapter 7, Daniel has a vision of four beasts. Those four beasts parallel the image in Daniel 2, Nebuchadnezzar's image. That image represents four kingdoms. These four beasts represent four kingdoms. And in Daniel chapter 7, he's going to focus on that fourth kingdom, that fourth beast, and then one king that comes out of it. Look at verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions upon his head, of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw my visions by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Now we come back and deal just with Daniel chapter 7, but four beasts that come out of the sea, a lion, a bear, and a leopard. Now lions, bears, and leopards don't live in the sea. So that's kind of a clue that this is probably imagery, all right? The sea in Bible prophecy always represents Gentile nations. The great sea always speaks of the Mediterranean Sea. So here are four beasts that come out of Gentile nations. Look at verse 7. And this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So now we have a fourth beast, terrible and mighty, and it has 10 horns. Now, without going into it, this is the revived Roman Empire, right? It's the same thing that's taking place in Daniel chapter 2. This is something that is going to happen. Look at verse number 8. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. So now we have this fourth empire, and it comprised of 10 kings. And out of those 10 kings, there rises another little horn. And this little horn rises up, and it plucks out three of the other horns by their roots. And this little horn becomes the focus of this prophecy. Now, Daniel's disturbed by this. What does this mean? So he asked an angel for an interpretation to him, verse 17. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. And Daniel said, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which he devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom three fell, even in that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake great, very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld. And the same horn, that little horn, made war with the saints and prevailed against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, this angel is explaining this to Daniel. The fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. The 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them. He shall be diverse from the first. He shall subdue 3 kings. He shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. They shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of times. You ought to remember that. But the judgment shall sit, they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. Now you probably pick up, all right, this fourth beast is a fourth empire, 10 horns, 10 kings. This little horn is another king that rises to power, makes war against God and the saints only for the time appointed by God. And when the Ancient of Days sits in judgment, his kingdom is going to be taken away and he's destroyed. That's what we've just read. That little horn is Antichrist. He rises to power out of those 10 kingdoms. He destroys 3 of those kingdoms, and 7 of those kings bow down and surrender power to him. Right now, there is a struggle going on around the world for control of the world. You hear words like globalism, multinationalism. You have multinational corporations that literally influence the elections in nations around the world. If you will think of how the entire world fell in line with COVID regulations because the World Health Organization put out whatever they put out, and the whole world bowed to some unelected organization, even in our election, even in our nation, the choice is not Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. It is national or global. That's really what the choice is. One day the push for globalism is going to succeed, and the whole world is going to fall under one united power. And out of this is going to arise 10 kings. Now, I'm not trying to guess who they are. 10 kings, 10 nations, 10 regions, 10 kingdoms, whatever. Bible students have said, well, it's the European Union. No, it's the common market. It's the United Nations. Nobody knows, and so you should not guess. But out of that 10 kingdom, out of those 10 kings, there's another little king that's going to arise. That's the Antichrist, and that's where he comes from. Well, here's what I want to say, dear. Here's all that I'm saying to you tonight. This, again, is the Reader's Digest version. But where's that 10-king confederacy? Where's that at? It's got to be in place for Antichrist to come out of it. There's got to be a global power to be set up for the Antichrist to take over. And here's what I'm trying to say to you. Everything is set up for the rapture, but everything's not set up for the tribulation. It has to be the revival of the Roman Empire and the rise of Antichrist. Well, let me give you a fourth thing tonight, a fourth thing that has to happen for the tribulation. That is the rebuilding of the temple. There are 4 passages of prophecy that speaks of a future temple in the tribulation. Daniel 9 and verse 27. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. That's in the temple. Matthew 24:15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. That's the temple in the tribulation. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3 talks about him coming and opposes and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And then Revelation chapter 11 will not go there. We'll look at it when we get to Revelation chapter 11. But there are 4 passages that talks about in the halfway point of the tribulation, there is something that's going to happen in the temple in Jerusalem. Well, there has to be a temple in Jerusalem. Would you give me that? There's got to be a temple. So I don't say that the temple has to be built before the rapture, but it's going to have to be built at least before the halfway point of the tribulation. Look at Isaiah chapter 6. Are you still with me? Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66. Isaiah Isaiah 66 and verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man will I look, even to him that is of poor and of a contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. He that killeth an ox as if he slew a man. He that sacrifices a lamb as if he cut off a dog's neck. He that offereth an oblation as if he offered swine's blood. He that burneth incense as if he blessed an idol. Yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abominations. I also will choose their delusions and will bring their fears upon them, because when I called, none did answer. When I spake, they did not hear, but they did evil before mine eyes and chose that in which I delighted not. Isaiah in Isaiah 66 speaks of a temple being built for God, which God does not sanction. There have been two temples built in Jerusalem. You got Solomon's temple, then you had Zerubbabel's temple, and then sometimes it's called Herod's temple. But now you're going to have a tribulation temple, and then you're going to have a millennial temple. And Isaiah foresees a time during the tribulation when they're going to build a temple and they're going to reinstate the sacrifices from the Old Testament. And God does not sanction them. In fact, in verse number 2, the reason why is because he requires faith, not animal sacrifices. To this man will I look, even him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and tremble at my word. That's what he's looking for. But verse 3, they reinstate these Levitical sacrifices, but they're no better than sacrificing swine or sacrificing dogs. And in verse 4, it said a true worship. Their temple is a religious demonstration of their continued rebellion against God. And in verse 5, there is a remnant of Israel that doesn't participate in this new temple, and God has a word of encouragement for them. Now we know that what triggers the second half of the tribulation is when Antichrist walks into that temple and commits what's called the abomination of desolation. Now, we're not told what that is, but we are told that he sets up an image to himself and demands that he is worshipped as God. Now, here is our question tonight. We're just deducting things. If he's going to walk into that temple in Jerusalem, there has to be a temple in Jerusalem. Is that right? There has got to be a temple in Jerusalem. Jerusalem's divided into two parts, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, and the Jews have control of one part, and the Muslims have control of another part of Jerusalem. And right in the middle is the Temple Mount. And the Temple Mount is the place where Solomon's temple and then Zerubbabel's temple is. It's a place where the temple sat and would be the place where they rebuild the temple. The problem is that the Muslims control the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is holy to the Jews. But the Temple Mount is also, I think it's the second most holy place, or maybe the third, second most holy place to the Muslim faith. Dome of the Rock sits there. The Al-Aqsa Mosque sits there. Muslim tradition says that that is where Muhammad ascended into heaven in their religion. And in order for a temple to be built there, the Dome of the Rock will have to be torn down. It'll have to be. Now, you can speculate as to how that's going to happen. All right? What war? How is that? I don't know. But there is going to be a temple built there. Now, you can read about all kinds of groups, and I'm moving on. You can read about all kinds of groups. There's supposed to be two groups of Jews, Orthodox Jews, in old quarters, and they're making furniture for it. They're training priests for how to do the sacrifices, and they're digging and all of that. I don't know. I just know that there is going to be a temple, and it has to be built before the halfway point of the tribulation. Because halfway in that tribulation, he's walking into that temple, committing the abomination of desolation. So I'm saying that some things have to take place for the tribulation. Let me give you a fifth one tonight. Fifth one. Are we okay? Are we still here?
Yeah.
Fifth one. The rebuilding of Babylon. Babylon. The most prominent city in the world in history and prophecy is the city of Jerusalem. The very fact that Jerusalem is mentioned more than 800 times in the Bible makes it worthy of special attention. It's the only city in the Bible that God calls a holy city. But the second most important city in the Bible is Babylon. Mentioned 286 times in the Bible. First time it's mentioned is Genesis chapter 11. The last time it's mentioned is Revelation chapter 17. Mentioned more than any other city in the Bible outside of the city of Jerusalem. And there are three places in Bible history where Babylon is very prominent. Genesis 10, Tower of Babel, in the plain of Shinar, Nimrod, you know the story. That's the beginning of the city of Babylon. It's called Babel. And then the second most prominent time is during the rise of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar reigns the Babylonian Empire. Babylon is the capital. He built it into this amazing city of the Hanging Gardens in Babylon. I think one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And then the third and final time is in Revelation 17 and 18. Would you go there with me tonight? Revelation 17 and 18. This city comes back into prominence during the tribulation. Revelation chapter 17 and chapter 18. In fact, hold your finger right there. And let me run to Isaiah 13 real quick. You don't have to go there, but let me find Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 13. And I'll read you a prophecy in verse 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation, neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there, but wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. So here's a prophecy about Babylon. And Isaiah said that Babylon is going to fall. We know that it did about 150 years later after Isaiah, the Medes and Persians come, and we understand that. But was the fall of Babylon to the Medes or the Persians, was that a fulfillment of Isaiah 13? I say that it was not, because of verse 20, it shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. God says that when I finally destroy Babylon, it will never be inhabited again. That didn't happen when the Medes and Persians took over. It has been inhabited since then. So where is the city of Babylon? Where is that? You may know the ancient city of Babylon is located about 40 miles south of Baghdad, Iraq. The city and the Tower of Babel, you remember, it was in the plain of Shinar. Check any Bible dictionary, and we'll tell you that Shinar is now called Iraq. In Revelation 17 and 18, we'll look at it when we get there. But Revelation 17 and 18 both speak of Babylon. And chapter 17 deals with the religious system of Babylon. And chapter 18 deals with the political and the commercial system of Babylon. In chapter 17, Babylon is a woman. In chapter 18, Babylon is a city. Four times it is called that great city. Look at Revelation 18. I've got to get to Elijah here in a minute. Look at verse number 1. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power. The earth was lightened with his glory, and he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Babylon is going to fall. Look at verse 5. For her sins have reached into heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquity. In the end time, Babylon is going to fall. Look at verse number 3. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Verse number 7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Look at verse number 8. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. Here's what God said. The judgment of Babylon is going to happen in 1 hour. The city is going to be utterly burned with fire. The world will see the smoke of her burning. The nations will stay at a distance for fear of torment. And it's going to take place in 1 hour. That's what Revelation 18 says. That Babylon is going to be destroyed in 1 hour with a great fire. Now, you can allegorize everything you want to in the Bible, or you can just take it for what it says. I think John probably would have wondered, how is it possible for a city to be destroyed with fire in 1 hour? Would be possible today, wouldn't it? An atomic bomb would do that. Probably a nuclear strike would do that, right? It would be possible. I'm not saying that that's what it is, but it is possible. In fact, look at verse 21. A mighty angel took up a stone like a millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. It's going to be destroyed. But if it's going to be destroyed, it's going to have to be rebuilt. Right? It'll have to be. And you're looking at me like, what strange doctrine have you come up with? I tell you this. Don't put Elijah up, all right? We'll just forget Elijah tonight and we won't talk about that. I'll tell you something interesting. All right? Fluorology. Saddam Hussein, dictator of Iraq for probably, I guess, 30 years, something like that. Saddam Hussein envisioned himself as the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar. While he was in power, one of the things he wanted to do was rebuild the city of Babylon. So in the early 1990s, there were books being written about Saddam Hussein and his obsession with Nebuchadnezzar. Articles being written and books being written about all the preparations he was making to rebuild that ancient city in honor of his hero. While he was in power, they invested over $500 million to rebuild Babylon. Then he got killed. 2004, whatever it was, all right? Then he got killed, all right? So there went all those prophecies. You know, Babylon was going to be rebuilt, and he was doing it, and now he's dead. That messed up a lot of prophecy preaching. But if Babylon is to be rebuilt, it's not left in the hands of one madman. If it's going to be rebuilt, it's going to be rebuilt. You wonder how Iraq, and I'm just talking now, I'm done, piano player come. You wonder how Iraq would have the finances to rebuild an ancient city. Until you realize they're the third largest exporter of crude oil in the world. It's interesting to me. Now, this is just interesting to me, all right? Now we're just talking now. In 2009, the United States opened up a new embassy in Baghdad, Iraq. It is the largest U.S. embassy in the world. $474 million to build that embassy. 104-acre compound. Which most embassies are like 9 or 10 acres. Why would we build our largest U.S. embassy in Baghdad, Iraq, 40 miles from ancient Babylon? Now, you find that interesting? I just find that interesting. I'll tell you what I believe is going to happen. I believe that God is going to allow the city to be rebuilt. It will be the capital of Antichrist's kingdom for a time, and it is going to be utterly destroyed. But if Revelation chapter 18 is to come to pass, and this city of prominence is going to be rebuilt or to be destroyed, then it has to be rebuilt. Say before the rapture? I have no idea. I think the rapture could happen tonight. But what I'm trying to say to you tonight is I don't believe that the tribulation could start this weekend. All right? I believe there is a gap of time. Now, there's a sixth one tonight. There's a sixth one, and we're not even going to touch it. Not even going to go there. Not even going to talk about him. Stand with me, if you would. Just leave it. We'll leave it alone. We're not going to say a thing about Egypt. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing about Egypt. And the 40 years, we're not even going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it. It's going to be done. I don't have all the pieces in place like I'd like to. And I'm very careful. I don't try to predict the future outside the Bible. I'm not interested in trying to have all the answers. I used to try to have all the answers. But now at 55, I don't really care to have all the answers, to be honest with you. It's not that important to me. And I am not interested in seeing what's happening on Fox News and trying to find it in the Bible. Yeah. Right. But our world is moving and it is shaking and there is so much unrest. Here's all I'd say. It sure looks like something big is about to happen. It sure does look like something big is about to happen. Say, which one of these are you looking for, preacher? I'm looking for Jesus to come. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for Jesus to come.